Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we cover queer and Latinx topics like...
Like Grace and Karen on Will and Grace. That's like a forever ship.
I mean, they had so much chemistry and they were so cute all the time.
And it was definitely on purpose that they put it in there. Like, they purposely put in little moments where they would literally kiss sometimes.
Oh my god, yes! They would kiss on screen. Like, it was a couple times.
On the mouth, like, it was normal, like, that's how they said goodbye at one point.
They didn't even try to not queer bait us, but I guess it was a queer show, but still, they could do better. Are they doing better? Who knows?
Cabrona,
what's popping, chingona? What's up? How you been? How's Cali?
It's great, honestly. Like, for the first time I'm actually busy here and have a good amount of things to do, and it's pretty exciting.
Oh, that's fucking awesome. I know you have some good interviews coming up. I'm so jealous. I'm so excited to hear them too.
I do. We have artists that are gonna be on the show. Today's part one, so today we're having Julio Salgado, and
next week, so excited.
Yes. And then next week we're gonna have Chucha and Pamela. All of them are artists here in California, and because our interviews were a little longer than expected, it gets to be two episodes instead of one, so you guys are gonna have a full month of Cabronas y Chingonas episodes.
Yay. But yeah,
dude, you're gonna love this. So yeah, I've already spoken with Julio. He lives in East LA. He's an amazing artist. We're going to post up some of his artwork on our social media at CYC Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat. So go check him out. Are you excited to listen to this?
Oh my God, dude, I'm so excited. I'm hyped for this. Like, I can't wait. I heard him everywhere on Latinos Who Lunch. So this is super cool.
For sure. Well, let's play it for you. And I wonder, should we come up with some transition music?
Oh, yeah. What could we do? Like, I know Babilito always just does his own, like, transition music.
He does the I can do my handy dandy record scratch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, that's perfect. Do that.
Okay, guys, I'm here with Julio Salgado. You want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. Hi, Maite. Yeah, my name is Julio Salgado. Mm-hmm. I am a visual artist and who also dabbles into video making. Although I don't really make the videos. I'm in front of the camera.
You're the talent.
I'm just the face of of this media group that we have, a multimedia group called Dreamers Adrift, along with... my best friend, Jesus Iniguez. Shout out to Jesus Iniguez up in the Bay. And a lot of the work that we do, it's really informed by our immigration status. I'm undocumented as well. So that there's a lot of content about being undocumented in this country, both in my visual art and in the videos that we put out. And on my, you know, also the fact that I'm a little queer. I don't know if you notice it in my voice. A lot of people are like, I didn't know you were queer until you talked.
Oh my God.
Until you talked, then I was like, okay, he's queer. And so yeah, that's what I do. And a lot of my artwork, I share it via my social media. I think a lot of people kind of became familiar with my work when I started sharing it on Facebook a couple of years ago, back in 2010, it's when a lot of people really started seeing my artwork. I've been making artwork since I was a little kid. But long story short, you know, a lot of us who have been undocumented for most of our lives, we have been pushing for something called the Dream Act. And so a lot of people know us as Dreamers. Although as a 34-year-old man, I don't think I qualify as immigrant youth anymore. And so a lot of my artwork was very much about documenting that movement that was, you know, undocumented youth kind of coming out of the shadows and saying we're undocumented and we're unafraid. And so back in 2010, it was a big year for us because we thought we were really close to passing the DREAM Act, which would have allowed undocumented immigrants to get some path to citizenship. And now we're in 2018, and some of us that have DACA are sort of like in limbo and not figuring out what to do. And so I call it right now, I'm making art in times of crisis, because art is, there's a lot of things that I can't control, but I can control my art. And so I think that that's, in a nutshell, that's what I do, making art so I don't go insane.
Yeah, it's therapeutic. I totally get that. And it's so important, especially like whenever you have movements like this, whenever you have, you know, something to fight for, to have art on your side, you know what I mean? To really have like that, the emotions and the feeling that everybody, you know, that everybody has during that time, just like immortalized.
Yes, I definitely agree. And I think art is, I mean, art, yeah, you know, art comes in different ways. But I think specifically when you're talking about movement work, the art is what kind of documents what's going on, because a lot of the times organizers, the people that are on the ground that are fighting, you know, they sometimes don't see the or don't have the time to document the important work they're doing. And so if it wasn't for the work of organizers, of undocumented youth that have been doing this for years, my work wouldn't have been this informed. And so I think that, and you know, this is, I'm part of a tradition of artists. Like I'm not the first person to do this, right? I really look at past movements and how they use artwork. You know, Emery Douglas, who did a lot of the artwork for the Black Panthers, to even the Riot Girl movement, you know, in the early 90s. I really think that art, it's a huge component to document what is happening.
I completely agree. That's why I just love like going on some, you know, like being online these days, like it's sometimes it's really hard, like it's overwhelming, but I love the artwork that comes from it. Cause I'm just like, this is it. This is my shit. Mm-hmm. And I love sharing it. And you know, I don't create that kind of art. So like I admire artists that much more.
I think we're lucky to be able to do that, because I think it's really a blessing. I don't know if I didn't have art, I don't know how I would be dealing with, you know, some of the things that are thrown at us. And so this is why whenever I go to different places to do workshops, like I'm like, talent, it's of course necessary, but you know, just creating something, whatever, you know, from making a podcast to making a film, writing a book, you know, writing a poem, like something, we all have something that is creative and that allows you, it's okay to like, you know, zone out and not watch, you know, 45 to, you know, this day. I didn't watch that.
I did not either.
Yesterday. I was like, I'm not going to put myself through that. I saw the memes. They were hilarious. But, you know, like, it's okay to disconnect and make art because it's necessary.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, I mean, like you mentioned earlier, it's not only, you know, the visual art that you make, not just the graphics, I should say, but you had the series Undocumented and Awkward. Mm-hmm. What I love about this that I noticed, because I was looking at the YouTube channel, is that this is like 2011, 2012. Mm-hmm. Like this DACA stuff, this like has really gone into the mainstream the last 2 years. You guys were like 7 years ahead of it. Like that's...
Bro, Kim Kardashian now is like, like I love dreamers.
Yeah, Camila Cabello at the Grammys. Like everybody's talking about it now, but you guys were talking about it way back then, and what you're saying... Like that show, that web series aged really well. Mm-hmm. Like it all applies completely.
And it's sad, right? That like a lot of the times we're still in the same, in you know, we
haven't progressed.
We haven't progressed a lot, although we have. And there's it's like there's we've gone step forward, but then we've gone, you know, a couple of steps behind. As I mentioned earlier, I don't really identify with the term dreamer anymore because I'm 34 years old. I think that specific identity is for young immigrant folks. Nonetheless, I came out of politically out of that movement of the Dreamer movement, which is actually going back to the first time that the Dream Act was introduced was actually back in 2001.
Yeah,
the first time, 2001. That's when I graduated from high school. So I've been fighting for this for, I don't do math, I draw. 17 years, exactly. That's a teenager. And so to me, you know, when you know, new, you know, people that are graduating, you know, high school this year, and they're undocumented, and they're really scared because they you know, they thought that they were going to graduate high school and they're going to have DACA, but it's really hard for them because, you know, I know, I'm familiar with that feeling. With that feeling of like not knowing what you're going to do after high school. But the fact that this video exists, and I'm like, if some of this youth that are, you know, barely coming out of high school, and even the little queer ones that are coming out of high school, if they see these videos, that they see themselves, you know, that, so that they're, for me, it's like that you see these videos and know that you're not alone, that even when we didn't have DACA, we figured it out. We are very resilient people, you know, immigrants. So the fact that people can find that the videos are accessible, and they're all the people in the videos, none of us are professional actors, of course. We're all undocumented. So from the people behind the camera to the people, you know, writing a lot of it was improvised, but we wrote some scripts, some flashcards. We were all undocumented, and so if the videos seem real, it's because they come from like real life.
Real.
Exactly. Yeah. Real life experiences. And so I'm so, yeah, like we started the Dreamers Adrift back in 2010, and undocumented and awkward. In 2011, we wanted to start using humor, to deal with some of these issues, because I was tired of crying. Like, I'm like, I am done just telling people, yeah, it's my parents' fault that I'm here and it sucks being an immigrant. Like, there's another side of me that laughs, that dates, that, you know, is messy, that is not a perfect immigrant. And so there's all these things that are part of me. I'm like, if white people are allowed to show their flaws on media, why can't we? And so for us, it was really important to kind of stay away from this narrative of like, look, I'm a perfect immigrant, I'm just a flawed human being who just happens to be dealing with this thing that it's called being undocumented. And so growing up, I was obsessed with sitcoms and, you know, comedy and SNL. And so it was I'm like, I want to do the same thing for us, for undocumented people.
I love that you said that, because not too long ago I was talking about on the show that they often use sitcoms to talk about really sensitive subjects that they don't want to put in dramas, because mm-hmm. it's like lubricated, like anybody can digest that, mm-hmm. that kind of, you know, anything. In comedy, you can digest any tough subjects, but that's what I think is normally why they go to the sitcom for certain subjects. Mm-hmm. But in your case, it was backwards. It mm-hmm. was more like, I want to talk about being undocumented. I want to make it funny because of me, not mm-hmm. not to make you feel better. It's for me to feel better. And I love that.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm actually really excited about the, you know, like the fall, like I was reading, I forget where, but there's a couple of shows that are really, they're going to center the stories mm-hmm. of undocumented, you know, like undocumented, like immigrants in this country. And one of them is it's actually being produced by Regina Rodriguez.
Oh, and then Gloria, yeah. Gloria Calderon Kellett from One Day at a Time is doing one.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. I know
a couple.
Oh,
or she's trying to, you know, like they're just trying to push it too.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. I know.
And then
that.
Gina Rodriguez.
Yeah. So Gina Rodriguez and Rafael Agustin, he's a writer. He's a writer for the series, and they're doing a story based on his life. He used to be undocumented. Back in the 90s, like way, like he's
and it was different.
Yes,
way different.
Yeah, like people. It was funny because I got to meet Rafael at this show called Into Action that just happened here in LA, and he was there, and we were just talking about how, you know, we are kids of the 90s. People were not that woke back then, you know, like
it was so, like not talked about.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah. Exactly. It was not talked about.
Unless it was within your own family. Cause I remember I had these conversations with my family, like, and basically all the terms that I knew uh-huh. were in Spanish because mm-hmm. only they talked about it. So it's only now that I know these terms in English.
Yeah.
Undocumented. Like,
I used to call myself illegal. I used to be like, I'm illegal. Like,
yeah,
I,
people used to use that term and it slips out. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And it's like, and I think that's, that's part of that history. And I'm happy now that, you know, younger generations have a language that
Dreamer that, sounds way nicer.
Yeah, Dreamer sounds nice. Yeah, exactly. Dreamer sounds nice. And it's funny because now, like, there were so many years that I went and I'm like, you know, we need to get rid of the word illegal. And now in my, and this is my sort of riot girl alternative, you know, influence in the 90s, that whole idea of being subversive with language, I start using some of these words on my art. You know, I use the word illegal, faggot. Can we say that here?
Yeah, you can say whatever okay, you want. Okay, yeah.
I don't want to be censored. but I think for me, it's sort of, I use them because to me now that I'm a grown man, and I mean, I still have some growing to do, but I'm like, these are words. What else do you have for me? I understand the power of words, but the way that we change queer and people that use queer against us, I'm like, yeah, I'm an illegal faggot. So what? What you got? What you got?
Like, yeah, like, what are you gonna hurt me with now? Like, the next thing exactly. You got is fists.
And you know what? And I'm gonna make it colorful as fuck. I'm gonna make it really pretty. And I'm gonna draw my, you know, belly in it. You know, and like, so it's really about like changing this culture that we of a. There's two things here. There's the changing the culture of I don't want to continue to see storylines about being a perfect immigrant, and I don't want to see us as the criminals. So there's like, you know, there, and even that word criminals, like, who's a criminal? You know, yeah. Somebody, what, a mom selling weed to feed his, you know, her kids, is that, you know, like, so I think the this idea of that we are, or that we're all Latinos, Latinx, you know, that's that there's so many stories of immigrants that haven't been told. And so I think it's important for us to switch that narrative and make it funny, make it messy, make it all kinds of, you know, of things that have influence that I've seen other things. You know, work and media.
Mm-hmm. And I like that too, because there's always two sides of it. Like, people are always labeling, you know, immigrants, undocumented immigrants, as criminals, and then they go against DACA for that reason. But and then they're like, okay, you can't be in DACA if you have a criminal record. But then mm-hmm. It's like, even if you do, that doesn't mean you don't deserve DACA.
Yeah, it's like DACA people are the most vetted people ever. Like, I don't even know why this is an issue. Like, we should, like, right now we should be in, like, not having detention centers. Like, we should be having a conversation about how detention centers are horrible, but instead we're talking about DACA. We're talking about, you know, like, the young people who, do they or do they not deserve to be here? And our parents are not even, you know, mentioned.
Yeah.
You know,
like, they only want to humanize the kids. And it's like, no, they're all human.
Exactly.
They all are deserving.
Exactly. And it's like we're only viewed as labor, as what we have to offer. And so that's why I you know, that show, you know, the one that you just mentioned, One Day at a Time, which I'm obsessed with. I just finished the whole season.
The second season.
I did it in a whole Saturday. Like, I did it. Came out last Friday, no?
Came out on Friday. I binged it twice when we did an episode art.
You binged it twice?
What did you think
about the whole Latinx cover? That was my favorite episode.
I love it too. I don't like the way she pronounces it, but I like that they brought it up.
They not just that, but they brought, like, colorism. They brought, like, the different, like, it was just, and it was funny because all the, like, I've always seen her, like, I'm like, she does hella look like Anne Hathaway.
It, like, blew my mind. I did not notice until, like,
they said. I'm like, yes, they named it. But I thought it was funny because, you know, again, that's a new word. And to me, something that I always remind, you know, people who are barely doing activism for the first time or are discovering these identities and knowing that not everybody has access to this language, you know, a lot of times it's very academic. And so to me, I'm like, can you explain that term to your abuelita? Like, there's this term called undocu-queer. I don't know if you heard of it, you know, which is about being undocumented and being queer. And I'm like, can you break it down to your mom and to your dad? Do they know what that means?
Yeah, I love that they didn't do it to the parents, but they did it to the guy that was, like, selling them food. And the guy was just like, okay, like, he doesn't give a fuck. He has to feed his family.
Exactly. And so it was funny. And, like, the way that it was, like, it wasn't making fun, because there's also this other part where, like, there's a lot of people who are like, oh, Latinx is, it's not a correct use of language. I'm like, first of all, language evolves, whatever, mm-hmm. shut the fuck up. You don't, you know, that's whatever. But then there's the other side of people who are trying to, who expect people to wake up knowing this information. And so the way that comedy does it, the way that they did it with the show, it's like, let's make fun of it, because a lot of the times we do come off a little bit, you know, self-righteous with our family, and they're like, ¿Crees que sabes más que yo?
Yeah, you think like, you know more than me?
Exactly.
They're
and
like,
so
calm down.
Exactly. And so, like, it's like, for me, it's like, how are we teaching these terms, how are we teaching these things? It's like, it starts with our family, you know, and you know, some of us who are lucky to still, you know, be with our families. You know, if you love your family, you need to talk about this. You need to talk about colorism. You need to talk about anti-blackness. Like, all these things that, if and on Twitter, sometimes it makes it seem like you need to know these things. But it's like, no, like, we need to have this. Like, the way that, and this is, I mentioned this in the podcast with Ansandual.
Ansandual doing it.
Mahamur Angelica's podcast. It's you know, the way, I lost my train of thought. The way that you know, we expect people to know these things, like, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, you're right. And we're not all privileged to, like, go to an academic setting. Mm-hmm. Like, the whole queer thing, I thought queer was bad until, mm-hmm. like, 2013, mm-hmm. whenever I took a class. Mm-hmm. And they were like, no, it's not bad.
Oh, girl, I was doing a workshop with this group of gay men in their 40s to 50s, all immigrant gay men. It was in Spanish. I wasn't prepared, you know, sin papeles y el español a la jodida when, you know, doing my workshop. Because I'm thinking, you know, in Americanized, you know, academy, you know, language.
Yeah.
Academic, not academy, academic language.
From the Oscars.
And so I remember I just dropped the word joto. I was like, yeah, you know, y nosotros como jotos. And then they were like, excuse me?
Oh, my God.
They were like, did you just say joto? And I was like, yeah, you know, like, we're reclaiming it. Estamos reclamando la palabra joto. And then they go like, you know, like, a lot of us moved to this country because they will make fun of us in Mexico for, you know, they would call us jotos. You know how much pain that word has. Mm-hmm. And so I was left like I couldn't defend it, you know. And so it was like, yeah, it was generational. It was kind of elitist of me to, like, assume this sort of, like, oh, but, you know that we're reclaiming the word because it's a new thing. And so that was, like, a big learning experience for me. I was faced with that situation. Like, another fellow gay man who was older than me, who was like, no, I'm never going to say that word. And, yeah, you know, I don't care, you know, your little reclaiming it. And so, you know, it's generational. Things change. And you know, I think culture plays a big role in how we put those things out there. Because just having a conversation like this, it's good, but it's like, how do we make it digestible for our own families? Not just for white people, but for our own families.
Yeah, because, I mean, even in podcasting, you know what I mean? Like, this conversation is great, but, like, people over 34, they typically don't listen to my podcast. They just don't. So it's like, yeah, how do I get this information to my family who have, like, no idea how to be around me now that I'm gay? Like, or, you know, like, or that's how they see it.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, we got to find a way to include everybody.
Yeah. And it's never going to be perfect. Like, it's never, we can try. I think as long as you try, because a lot of people are like, no, I'm not.
It's not going to work.
It's not going to work. Like, at least you try. I know that it's never going to be perfect. One, you know, something that I constantly say, like, one book is not going to cover every single identity within the Latinx community. You know, one movie, one, you know, like, there's opportunities for people to grow, to create something. One of the questions that you, I think you texted me a question, like, you know, if you saw yourself.
Yeah, let's get into that. Like, what do you see yourself represented in, or have you even?
Yeah, well, you know, like, I remember the first time that I saw Will and Grace. Like, Will and Grace for me was a big deal. And I specifically remember the moment that I watched, you know, Will and Grace. I was like, I was in 11th grade. And I was taking, oh, no, it was actually the summer between 11th and 12th grade. And I was taking an art class at the Art Institute of LA, And I would take the train from Long Beach to Santa Monica, which is like an hour and a half or something. But I paid, it was like a week long, workshop at the Art Institute. And I remember I stopped at a Carl's Jr. and I started watching this show. And one of the first characters was Rosario. And I'm like, I remember, you know, thinking it was like really funny. And then Karen, and then like all these characters, and then Will. And then like, to me, I was like, oh my God, this is a gay show. And I remember like eating my, you know, Carl's Jr. burger and, you know, looking around kind of being like, oh my God, this is
like, are you guys seeing this
too? This is gay. This is like a gay show. And, you know, as the years progressed and I became obsessed with that show. I didn't realize that this was a story of a gay white man. And I had more in common with Rosario than I had, because I was cleaning houses with my mom. But what I love about Rosario was that she was like, she wasn't putting up with shit. You know, she wasn't putting up with Karen, who another character that I love. And so I think that it was really great to have Will and Grace. I'm actually not that excited about the, because they did a reboot. And I'm like, Do we really need Will and Grace
right now? Or do we need, you know, Maite and Julio? Because
exactly.
That would be way fucking funnier.
But Will and Grace paved the way for a lot of creative people. I think it's more than anything, it's like nostalgic. It's great. It's great that you were able to see it. But I think, you know, Matthew Rodriguez from Into Magazine, he wrote this article about how he was comparing the new Will and Grace with One Day at a Time, and how One Day at a Time actually was getting it right when talking about the current political situation, because Will and Grace is focusing as Trump as the, like, the boogeyman, you know, this Trump is like the big bad guy. But One Day at a Time, they're like talking about issues within family. Like they're more complex. And I'm like, those are the stories that I'm interested in. Shout out to Matthew, who is an amazing writer for Into Magazine. And so I think that you know, those shows paved the way. One of the episodes I was listening from your podcast was about Friends. Like Friends being a hella problematic show.
So bad, but they raised me. I don't know what
exactly to say. Like that's how I learned English. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how I learned English. And so I think that I actually saw Friends before Living Single. Like, I didn't realize that Living Single came out in 1993, and it was like basically the same show. But I'm like, but those shows like really paved the way for some other creatives. And so I think that right now we need to kind of, you know, white gays need to like kind of move out of the way. Like, you, the reason why you are kind of have privilege, there's homophobia, that's real,
but that's all you have to fight now for the most part.
It's going to back to Will and Grace, in the new episode, the ex-boyfriend, it's a cop. And so no mention about, like, there's no race analysis. I'm like, make a joke about it. Why? I don't know what their writing room looks like. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're not comfortable to make a joke about Black Lives Matter, or make a commentary about the fact that you have a gay policeman in this show, and there's no commentary on the current state of people of color and how we feel about cops. And you can do that in comedy. Like, you can, if who you have in your writer's room. And so it's like really, you know, it paved the way, but now we need more stories. We definitely need more stories from us. The Maite and Julio stories.
That would be a really good show.
I'm down.
No, I mean, because I watched like two episodes of that new season, and I was just like, okay, this is like, you're not even trying. I've been heard from shout out Luis from Muslim Swami. He said that it does have some people of color, and, you know, does more stuff later in the season. But I still feel like they're the main characters; they're the focus. And
I was really excited because in the first or second episode. Of course, I'm watching it.
I'm gonna binge it later. Like,
I'm watching these shows. Like, I'm gonna watch Roseanne when they come out. But like, I was really excited because they had a character in the new Will and Grace who was Grace's intern, and he was one of the actors from Hamilton. He's I think he's Puerto Rican. I might be wrong. Don't quote me on that. but he's in Hamilton, he's not back. Like he was only in one episode, and it was the whole thing between, you know, his storyline was, you know, if he was uncomfortable by the things that Karen was saying, you know, because Karen is like really into Trump and shit. But I was like, bring him back. Like, you know,
you can't just use him as a tool. Yeah.
Rosario didn't come back. Like
how could she not come back?
She didn't want to do it. She was just like, I'm retired. Like, I don't want to.
I get it. That's fine.
And so they kill her off. They killed her off. I should have said, what is it called?
Spoiler alert.
Oh, sorry.
I'm shook. They killed her off. They couldn't be a little nicer than that. They couldn't be like, oh, she won the lottery.
Yeah.
God, that's so rude.
I know.
That's so fucking rude. Will and Grace writers. Fucking, I'm gonna tag
JLo's coming back. I hear that she's coming back. I'm hoping that, I don't know. Like, I don't. There were so many things that you could have done with the character. But of course, if the actor doesn't want to be in it, you know, it's kind of, it might be out of the writer's head. But it's like killing her.
That's just too much. No. Have you seen The Fosters at all?
I have not. It's one of the shows to watch. Like,
it's an okay show. The reason that I bring it up is because just in this season, mm-hmm. they have a queer, like, brown Latina lesbian who's undocumented, and basically this whole season storyline has centered around her DACA status and like protesting and the, you know, walking those lines and the beliefs that, you know, some people are like, oh, you should get into this country the right way. Like, they bring all of it up. Mm-hmm. And they bring in using art as a form of activism. Mm-hmm. They bring all of it in this season. Like, I would honestly ignore like all the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. Just watch this season, mm-hmm. or last season too, because they have like a trans character, and I love mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they have like a brown Latina lesbian mm-hmm. who's undocumented, and they focus on her story and they treat her respectively, and she's an artist and she's well rounded mm-hmm. and she's flawed, like. It's the most amazing thing that I've seen come out of ABC Family, mm. whatever the fuck, Freeform. Mm.
I need to check it out. I was thinking about that. I thought it was the one with the guy from, I'm so horrible with names, by the way. So
the guy from what?
The guy from Gilmore Girls. He's in a new show. Jesse from Gilmore Girls.
This Is Us.
Yeah, that, mm-hmm. okay, I thought it was, okay, so that's a different show.
That's a different show, yeah.
Okay. Because apparently, like, it has
makes big, everybody cry, I don't know.
It makes people cry?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, okay. That's another show, Gilmore Girls. People say that I have a very, like, I'm a white girl on the inside. And I was actually, on my way here, I was thinking about, like, how cis brown men have a lot in common with white girls. Both of us, you know, both white girls and cis brown men, you know, we have privileges. You know, white girls have their whiteness, cis men, we have, you know, being men is a privilege. We don't like to be called out on that privilege. It's like, but I'm a brown man, but I'm a woman. It's like, yeah, but, you know, check yourself. I had another list. I'm totally going blank, but I'm like, there's parallels between white men, white women and brown men. And I'm like, this is why I love my Gwen Stefani, my Jewel, okay. Garbage, Courtney Love. Like I grew up on all that. And I was thinking, why do I like this music so much? I mean, aside from, you know, it was a good music in the 90s.
Why did we have to move on from that? It was so good.
No, I know, in the fashion. But I was just like, you know, there was a time where, you know, I used the riot girl movement, you know, in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, you know, where white women felt empowered to, like, I'm going to tell my own story. I'm going to do this. Yeah. This is like, what, third wave feminism?
So, yeah, even the first and second ones, yeah. Before black people got involved.
Yeah, but I really love the way that they use art.
Showing off her guns.
Yeah, exactly. Or just, you know, when, you know, Kathleen Hanna from Bikini Kill writing on her stomach slut and you know, like, very, very, like, in your face about it. I was like, I want to do that for, you know, for myself. But I was like, because I get make fun of, you know, like, you like white girl music a lot. There's this thing that people don't like to acknowledge their privilege. And yeah, we are in some ways and very, in a lot of ways, we are, you know, put into
disadvantages. Well, yeah.
But it's like, but there's a lot of advantages of being a cis brown person a lot of the times. That doesn't mean that I'm not gonna play Operation Olympics who has the worst brown men or white girls. But you know, I had an incident back in 2003. I got pulled over by cops and they searched my car. I didn't have a license and they pointed a gun at me. But they didn't shoot. I'm like, can you imagine if I was a black man? Like, yeah. I got away with it because of my skin, you know, like light brown skin privilege. And so a lot of the times there's things that, yeah, we are oppressed, but there's privilege that we have and people don't like to acknowledge that. The same goes with class and all these things. And so I think that in a lot of the work that I do that I'm writing, like, I want to acknowledge that. I don't want to repeat what we are constantly telling white people to do, which is don't tell other people's stories and acknowledge your fucking privilege. And so I think it's important that we're in a time right now where it's like, acknowledge that privilege that you have. I think people are afraid of that.
Bringing that up, the artwork that you did for the Pantallas Inclusivas, what is it in English?
Yeah, Pantallas inclusive screens. Yeah.
You did it, you know, you didn't just do it about a queer mm-hmm. brown man. Mm-hmm. You did it about, like, trans men, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you put, like, the flags of all sorts of Latin American countries, not just Mexico, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, not just this or that. Like, I love seeing that because it's like, yeah, like, just because I am, you know, a light-skinned Mexican queer woman mm-hmm. doesn't mean that I can't stand up for other people.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, something that I've heard a lot within the especially like cis gay boys, right? Like, we come out a lot in defense of trans women as we should, and when we hear, you know, straight cis men like, I wouldn't date a trans woman because you're not a real woman, like, we get mad,
right?
But I heard so many times from cis gay men who say, I will not date a trans man
that's
because
stupid.
They're not real men.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, do you realize that doesn't make you any different than
from the women who say that about
trans women?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's important to highlight that transphobia within the gay community. You know, when I was asked to create an image, you know, the idea that, you know, we're not just from Mexico too. Like, you know, that when people think of Latinx communities, or when people think about immigration, the first country that comes to your head
is Mexico.
Like, and okay, it makes sense because we're like right across the border. But immigration is like, oh, it's like global. It's a global thing. And I think that hurts other communities who don't get to tell their story, their immigration story, because people assume that you only Mexicans. And so, you know, this you know, Latin America is hella diverse, and I'm really excited for like Cardi B and Amara La Negra, who are kind of talking about, you know, colorism in the Latinx community. You know, they're saying, you know, this shit is real, and you know, there's we come in different colors, you know.
Yeah.
and so it was important for me to reflect that, and because, you know, it was, you know, they were like, you know, how can we make sure that we include, you know, clues, and so I'm a very like, oh, let's put it in the fashion, let's put it in the clothes, so I'm really excited that things like that, you know, Gladys, it's, you know, has done a lot of great work in making sure that we are part of that, you know, part of that, like not just, you know, because you're queer. But, you know, race, like, you know, the intersectionality of that, I think it's very important. After gay marriage, I feel a lot of gay men
were
like, oh, we're done. We're not fucking done.
It's like,
no, there's still a lot more work to do. You know, if DACA of the Dream Act passes And,
there's still, you know, more there's still TPS. There's still so much things.
Mm-hmm. There's still so much stuff to work for. And so it's sad that we're still fighting for this shit. But it really surprises me a lot when people who were once oppressed are the ones who are kind of like, oh, but we're fine. Or they kind of use the same language. During a pride parade in Arizona, during pride, there was a contingent of people of color who stopped the parade, and they were like, they were protesting. There were a lot of undocumented folks, and like white gay people around, they were like, this is not the time to protest. It's like, do you know where pride comes from? Like, do you know, like, they were like, go back, or, you know, let us have our pride, as if though we're not part of that community. Right. And they make it no. And so to me, when people, she's the one, they get mad when there's protests during pride. I'm like,
what do you think, like, it started
where
out
did,
as?
Where did it come from? You think
we were,
think
just happy for the beginning to get
though? Yeah, it's really mind-boggling how people forget it. And to me, I'm like, is that gonna happen in the future? People who are currently oppressed, or how are we gonna oppress other people? Like, it sucks.
That's why I think it's so important that even though we're still fighting this DACA fight, you still see people finally bringing up, like, oh, El Salvador is having a shitload of issues too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I like that we're, because people sometimes feel like maybe overwhelmed, and I'm guilty of this when it comes to media. Like, if they pile issue upon issue upon issue, I start to be like, you know, I get frustrated. Mm-hmm. But then I'm just like, no, at the same time, let's not let them forget. Like, it's not just about queer women. You know what I mean? It's about everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, one thing that I've always said is, like, if you're for social justice, you can't pick and choose. Like, you have to be down
across the board.
Exactly. Across borders, no pun intended.
There you go.
I think that it's important that we don't forget that. And it's okay if you kind of, cause I mean, this is another thing that happens, you know, when movement work, a lot of people get burned out. And so it's like, kind of, you create the spaces so that younger people will continue that fight, or will pick up fights, and you know, we'll figure out creative ways to live. Like, again, going back to this language, like, I'm so happy that there's languages that young people can use now. And for us, it's not about like, well, Latinx doesn't make sense. It's like, no, be happy that young people don't have to deal. Like, there's people that get mad when, like, well, back in my day, it was so hard to come out. Back in my day, you know, we didn't have the Dream Act. Like, it's like, I'm happy that there is that. Mm-hmm. I'm happy that things like that exist that make it easier for people to not live that hard. But it's like, let's not forget that history, where that come from. And, you know, you kind of pay it forward.
Right, right. Exactly. Exactly. So, like, instead of, you know, sitting there and, like, bitching about, like, the past, let's talk about what we're going to take care of after we're done with this.
Yeah. And again, going back, I think why I love TV, I love sitcoms, I love music, it allows you to kind of escape those realities. But I'm so happy that right now we're in a moment where Hollywood is kind of taking notice of the movements that are happening.
They have to.
Exactly.
The criticism is working.
Exactly. But to me, I'm like, how do we continue doing that? But without preaching or talking down to people, because it's a fine line between addressing some of these issues and turning people off from these issues. And sadly, that's the reality. Look, America, this country, the way that they learn about the other is through TVs. Like, let's be
through
real.
Through all of media.
Through all this media. And so, like, it's up to, like, really creative writers. And it's about giving creative writers a chance to tell the stories in a creative way, in a way that is like, doesn't feel like you're being talked down to, or like being talked. And I'm not just talking about like getting the white audiences, but also like our families, our people that, you know, our fellow, you know, people of color who might not be that woke but still watch TV, is like, how do we get to those people?
How do we hack into the novela sphere? Because that's what we really need. That's where we're gonna get them.
That's a whole. You need a whole different like a whole episode about like novelas and you know,
major colorism there. Yeah. That's where we could really get out our parents. That's the only reason I bring it up. But mm-hmm. I think
my goal is to like do like a Betty La Fea. Like, a mí me gusta la original. A mí me gusta hacer el acento colombiano porque, pues, o sea, yo miraba a Betty la Fea cuando estaba chico.
That's hilarious.
How do we do something like that? How do we
Betty get la Fea, but trans.
Betty la Fea, yeah. You know, there's so many things that you can use a novela to kind of, like, I'm trying to think. Well, I haven't seen any new novelas, but, like, I think that, like, the last novela was, like, where they had young people and they had like it was a Rebelde or Clase 406 where they had a gay guy.
Well, Rebelde had a gay actor, but
he wasn't out in the no. But they actually like there was a storyline mm-hmm. where one of the students was a gay man.
So it
was
like
actually
that?
A positive gay, like, you know, he was positive.
Okay,
he was HIV positive. I forget. It was one of those the Clase 406.
I was obsessed with Rebelde, so...
I was a Clase 406 kind of person. Okay. It was
right before Rebelde.
Rebelde came out when I was... I think... Was I already in college?
Possibly, because I think I was about to get into high school.
Okay, yeah, I was... Yeah. Yeah, Clase 406 is when I was still in mm-hmm. high school.
It might have been 406, especially because, like, that was the only really queer representation that you got back in the day. It was like they wanted to talk about HIV and that's it. Like, we're more than that.
Right. And I think, I mean, even then, like, that was a little, like, I mean, at least you're trying. Like, I don't know what new novelas are out right now. I don't really watch. I mean, I have Netflix.
Like, Chile has one good one right now. Like, that's pretty much it. That's all I know.
With queer people?
Yeah.
What? ¿Cómo se llama?
Fuck, what is it called? I'd have to look it up.
Okay, I have to see that movie that you guys were talking about last time.
The Firefly?
The Firefly.
La Luciernaga.
Well, the one with the you told the whole story about, like, the she was working at the radio show with the uncle who was really religious.
That was Fred Pepita. Okay, yeah, okay, that's the Firefly. I haven't seen it yet.
okay. She was watching it. Your co-host. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's called Las Estrellas, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's just like a lesbian couple, and of course they're both light skinned and they're both beautiful.
Yeah.
But
I mean, the L word.
No, but one of those characters on Las Estrellas, one of the two lesbian ones has a
Tourette's.
Yeah, she said Tourette's syndrome, and they discuss like therapy and shit like that.
Ah.
So it's not horrible.
Yeah, I just think there's so many. The world is so big, and there's so many stories to tell. It's just to me. It's about having the right person to do it and the talent, of course. Like, I don't want to see a gay movie for the sake of
just it's gay. It's a gay movie. No,
like
I want some plot. I want some.
Yeah, exactly. Dimension. Exactly. You know, I just saw Call Me By Your Name.
How did you feel about it?
I didn't really want to like it because I was like, oh, another story, you know, to white men. You know, in Europe, but it was really well written.
It was well acted. Yeah, that's what happens when you have a book first.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, sometimes.
Literally, the only thing I can really take from that movie is that dad speech.
The dad speech. Oh my god.
We have an episode on that, by the way.
On Call Me By Your Name. Mm-hmm. Okay, I have to.
That's like our second last one.
Okay.
But yeah, we talked about it. We actually went to go watch it together. I don't know what to expect from it, but you're like,
did you cry? I cried at the last scene.
I cried when I went home.
Really?
Because I'm not a little bitch. Not gonna... No, but yeah.
I am a little bitch. I mean, when the last scene.
Oh, the Elio, like, Elio, that.
The what?
Where he's like saying his own name.
Yeah. No, when he's crying in front of the fireplace. Like, the whole scene, mm-hmm. and then the soundtrack. I mean, if you don't go see the movie, check out the soundtrack. It's on Spotify. The Call Me By Your Name soundtrack is so good. Like, it's like classical music, but, you know, it has a little bit like of
but it's
like
very like emotional.
It's so emotional, that scene. Oh my god. And it was well acted. It was just the you know, there was resources to make that movie, to cast the right person.
Imagine if they put that much effort into something with brown people, with a trans person, but
yeah,
the best things go to white gays first.
Yeah. Have you seen Mosquito y Mari?
Yeah, we talked about it episode one. Oh, that's episode one. Okay. That's Fiber Pito's like favorite movie.
Okay. I need to introduce you to Aurora Guerrero. Because Aurora, the filmmaker.
You like know her?
Yeah, she's
she followed us like on Twitter when we barely were starting out and like we freaked out. Like,
yeah. I mean, really, she's like really busy and like she has, you know, a kid and everything. But we, so she's actually mentor. So I work at Culture Strike. It's an organization. It's like an arts organization. And we're working with a lot of filmmakers, and we brought her on board, to mentor some of our undocumented filmmakers. Wow. So she's fucking dope.
I'm gonna bring her on board to mentor me.
Yeah, girl. Like, I think what I love about Aurora is that she's very, like,
she seems very down to earth. She's
very community oriented. Oh, okay. Like, she's like the Mosquito y Mari movie that she made, she did it here in Huntington Park, which is, you know, it's just outside of LA. And she brought in like interns from the community, to work in the movie, people, you know, young youth that were interested in working in film. And so it's like, I just love the way that she works. Mm-hmm. So imagine if like people like Aurora had more access
to funds, basically. Funds,
like, you know, to
make, I have a dream of like, right? Of like winning the lottery and making like 100 movies about gay brown people.
Just give the money to like, yeah.
You have no idea.
It's just so much talent, and it's sad that we're like kind of not shown or like not taken through that pipeline of like, look, art is a way for you to either make a living or, you know, get there, or, you know,
it's really not. It was like, go be a lawyer.
Exactly. I studied journalism, like because I was like, no, and it's also really intimidating because it's very wide. Like every, you know, whether it's film, art, like, you know, I remember taking, I remember taking a class. You know, my initial major was art major, and it was like old white people, and it was just like, this is not for me, and it's so expensive and undocumented with no access to like federal funds, like. I was like, this is not for me. And so I wanted something like a major that would give me a job. And I was like, well, if I become a journalist, I can work at a newspaper. That didn't happen. But, you know, it introduced me to political art because I started making cartoons for a newspaper.
Yeah, no, that's completely true. Because me and Eva from De Colores Radio talked about recently how we went to film school together, and like we were the only two Latinas in that class.
Wow.
That we were in. So, yeah, it's... It was very white and like in one of the most like liberal schools in North Texas.
Yeah, but I'm so happy that there is brown people, people of color that are holding spaces. Because I feel like I quit. Like I'm like, no, this is not for me, and I walked away.
But it's so easy to do that because I mean it's not an easy none of these industries are easy to break into, especially if you don't like you're not somebody's daughter or son. Oh. And nepotism is real.
I mean, can we do that? Can we use nepotism? I think that, like, but it's different when we do it, right? Like, I mean, if somebody makes it, you better bring somebody else because
we're just evening out the playing field. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're so right. I think we both exhausted each other.
Just like, yeah, oh, you know, like, oh my god, well. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. And for inviting me to your awesome apartment. Like, the artwork here is great. I've been staring at all of it. But tell us where we can find you.
Yeah, you can find my website is juliosalgadoart.com. And you can always follow me on Instagram. That's where I post all of my artwork at juliosalgado83. That's the year that was born.
In case you were wondering.
In case you were wondering how old I am. But I know I look. You know, in my 20s.
I thought you were in your 20s, for sure. Okay, yeah, well, we'll tag him if you're too lazy to search, so go to ours and check it out because he has some really amazing work that I've been fangirling about.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for being on the show.
Of course. Like,
this is going to be a full episode. Yeah,
of course. And I'm going to, she just moved to LA, I'm gonna be taking her out to the Gablehood.
Oh, yes. Let's do RuPaul.
Expect to see her on my timeline. Or what is it? The Insta stories.
And vice versa. Yeah. So yes. Tune in. All right. So what did you think of the episode?
Oh my God, it was so good. I love that you guys went in depth about like what it is to be undocumented, what it means to be queer, what it means to subvert culture by just being your queer self. And I love that he's like fully embodying every part of his identity and kind of like embraced it, and he's showing it off, and I love it. I just love his energy. It's so good. I fuck with this episode.
It's so even better in person. He's such a really cool guy. And like we mentioned in the episode a little bit, he had a web series where they kind of do some stuff on their YouTube channel. So just look up Undocumented and Awkward. The episodes are really short, but it's a good series.
And also he's been not riding the wave, but he's been on the forefront of, well, not just dreamers, but undocumented people for a hot minute. 17 years?
Something like that. Yeah, he's definitely, I mean, like I told him on the episode, like he was ahead of his time in working towards that stuff. Like we're all just catching up.
We are just catching up, but it's a very good thing that we're catching up, because at least all of this is being brought to the forefront. It's no longer like this invisible thing anymore. Everyone's getting a voice and using any kind of platform they have to create. And that's what, oh my God, I'm just, he's so fucking cool.
Yeah, I mean, better late than never. I mean, go on to our social media, like I mentioned earlier, at CYC Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat. We'll tag him for you guys so that you know where to find him.
Yes, and of course, go follow Facebook, him.
Mm-hmm. And our Facebook is facebook.com/CYC Pod, because podcast wasn't available. So check that out. And we have a couple of shout outs to give today for the month of, I guess, February.
Yes,
from our patrons on Patreon. Thank you guys so much for
thank y'all. Y'all are the shit.
Like, let us. I really want some feedback on what you guys want. What kind of content you guys want provided. We have like two more full episodes that we have already ready to put out for March and for April. But, you know, we welcome feedback. All right. So our very first pledger was Alicia Merritt, who I believe is from Australia. So shout out to you. You're so awesome. Like, I see you on Facebook interacting and liking our stuff, and that's freaking awesome. And I love that we have like people in other, like, literal continents listening to us.
It's lit as fuck.
That's so wild. And we are look forward to hearing from you. Like, chat with us sometime. We're around. I can be a bit of a night owl sometimes. I think Australia is like on a different time schedule or whatever,
and they still listen to us. That's lit as fuck
for sure. And then so let's, yeah, what about your concha pledge? Mine is the cafecito. So somebody pledge for your concha.
Yeah, someone pledged for my concha. So what's up, Raciel Camargo? What's poppin'? What it do? Appreciate you listening to us. Appreciate you giving to the Patreon. It means a lot to both of us. It means the world. So shout out to you for being the shit. I see you. You went to UNT. Shout out to UNT. Shout out to you. And keep fucking with us. It means a lot.
For sure. And then last but definitely not least, a really good friend of ours, Noelle from the High Lawn Life podcast. We've mentioned Noelle. Her before. Yeah, I actually did an interview for her show. So like, if you go back in time, there's an episode labeled Maite. That's me talking to her. And she's amazing. She's such a nice chick, and she lives like in Oregon. So definitely check her out. Check out her podcast more than anything, and give her some love on Twitter. She's super active on Twitter.
Yeah, show her some love on iTunes. Give her a little review. We fuck with you, Noah.
I don't know if you drink coffee or not, but enjoy your cafecito.
She drinks whiskey, I know.
Bourbon. Oh wow, I didn't know that. Hey, you can make that cafecito Irish.
Hey, it happens. She can pour some in there. It'll be an interesting morning.
But yeah, thank you to all of you guys. If you guys want to go and check out, you know, we have some pretty cheap levels and content available for you guys on patreon.com/CYC podcast. And we're basically, this month we're not even going to have an off week, but next month on our off week we'll release another episode. Hint, it's Guillermo del Toro related.
Yes.
So yeah, and then of course as always, rate and review us, because that's gonna help us so
five
much
stars.
So we can reach more people.
Yes, five stars only. give us a leave us a review, rate and review, follow us on Instagram at TYC Podcast. Our personals, mine is at Fried Papita. Maite, what's yours?
I am also on Twitter, MYTE Panda. And that's pretty much the only thing I use. So hopefully you guys have that. And of course, Facebook, on the Facebook, you can talk to me on our page.
Thank y'all so much for listening. We appreciate the love.
And tune in next week. We have two more artists who are also, queer and who are also Latinx and very talented. So we'll see you then.
All right. Bye, y'all.
Bye.